And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Decision that should delight fans across the nation. The NBA today has selected Larry Bird of the Boston Celtics Rookie of the Year, beating out the year's other rookie sensation, Magic Johnson, who currently finds it.
Rule number one, fucker. If you're thinking you ain't up to it, you ain't. Ooh, big two.
Bet I look good on that.
Won't be on there tomorrow. Be me up there, winning me a ring.
Don't matter none. Ain't against me, nobody gives a shit.
Says who?
I'm in your head, ain't I?
I'll get your ass next year.
Nope. You actually believe that, I wouldn't be here. Nice try, though.
Man, fuck off.
Make me. Except you can't, can you? Because I'm better than you. Better player? Better man.
No, that's right.
Got that right.
You an asshole.
At least I'm real.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck all y'all.
I ain't believing none of this shit.
You just fucking with my mom, playing tricks and shit. I'm gonna go out there and win me a ring.
You ain't.
None of y'all gonna be nowhere close.
Bruh. New York strips thick.
This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang!
With Zach Harper and your favorite athletic writers.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
Brunson defends, snaps it outside to Wiggins. Goes by Bull.
Oh! Drops the sledgehammer!
Successful challenge by Steve Kerr and the Warriors. It's not a offensive foul on Andrew Wiggins, nor is it a defensive foul on Luka Doncic, but it is a good bucket and poster by Andrew Wiggins.
Welcome to the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper. I got Mo Dakil. I got Javon Edwards. And the back half of this episode, you will hear from Larry Bird himself. Well, kind of. Sean Patrick Small, who plays Larry Bird on Winning Time, the HBO series on the 80s Lakers, joined myself and Mo Dakil for a fun little interview, getting behind the process of becoming Larry Bird and what that was like and acting in general and a little behind the scenes on the show and learning how to become Larry Bird on and off the basketball court. So we'll talk to Sean Patrick Small. You'll hear from that. But guys, we have a hell of a Eastern Conference Finals and not so much a hell of a Western Conference Finals. So let's start off with the Eastern Conference Finals. Let's start off with the good one. Mo, with what? I got very annoyed yesterday.
Shocking. You got annoyed.
As I woke up and I saw all this just bullshit online of like, well, we've won 10 of 12 quarters. And I'm like, you're down 2-1. What is the moral victory shit? Like, what's happening right now? I thought this was Boston. I thought Boston was like title town and like, this is what we do. And I'm seeing all this. We've won 10 of 12 quarters. I just thought like, yeah, agreed. You have that's a fact, but you barely like, you barely came back in game three. And a lot of them are like, what are you talking about? We're down 25 points, came back and down one at one point. Like, yeah, against Vic Oladipo. Like, it's because Jimmy Butler didn't play in the second half. Like, and I know availability has been very, very important in this series. Like, Marcus Smart, now Horford don't play in game one, they play in game two. Oh my God, look what happens. But also, like, Kyle Lowry didn't play in the first two games, and he looked really good in game three. They were killing in game three. And so like if you avoid the one big mistake of a quarter in game one and game three, sure, you could be up 3-0 right now, but you didn't. And that's kind of a flaw, and that's something that you do have to correct, because if you don't, you're two moral victories away from being out of the playoffs.
I mean, it's more importantly, when you do lose a quarter, it's by like 20. It's not like you're not even really in that quarter at all. Like first quarter of the game three, 39-18. Like you're not, you've dug yourself quite a hole. Even if you come back and win the other quarters by one, okay, then you've lost by like, you know, 18 at that point. Exactly. You know, it's like if that's your logic of we won the quarter, well, they won the game and that's the end of it. But Zach, I think you kind of buried the lead. Bam Adebayo showed up.
Yeah, he was great.
He was unbelievable. You know, this is the Bam that, you know, every now and then Jimmy says, oh, he's actually the best player on the team, all that stuff. This is the Bam they're talking about. And this is the Bam that's super aggressive, comes out with kind of set the tone, him and Kyle Lowry.
Welcome Lowry to the playoffs, Bam Adebayo.
Yeah, it's about time. Jeez.
So many series he should have been eating, Trey. And now he's finally going. You know, it's just impressive. Everything that they had going, I was kind of just watching that first quarter. I was just like, holy shit.
Yeah, I do wonder how much no Robert Williams III plays into how good Bam was in game three. But also, Trey, I mean, I don't know about you. I feel like Bam can do this against anybody. I really do. Like, I think Bam, it's been there for him the whole time. A lot of teams are allowing him to kind of do whatever he wants in the middle of the floor. And he's just been looking like, all right, where can I pass it next? And it's like, yo, just go be a monster.
Yeah, I think he's overthinking it at this point, you know, watching his teammates succeed and just kind of deferring. And it kind of reminded me of Kleber last night, you know, just not looking at the basket and just kind of like, yo, what what are you doing out there, dude? Shoot the ball.
We'll get to that one later.
You know what I mean?
He got shook. Man.
So when you look at Bam's situation, it's kind of frustrating, I guess, if you're a Heat fan watching it, because it's like what? Come on, man. Like, we need you. And he finally shows up, and I think he's definitely capable of doing it again. And, you know, my only concern, I mean, the Heat are very militant in their how they're, you know, staying healthy and kind of getting guys. And that was kind of their story of just not having all their guys. And then they start the playoffs with like almost 17, 18 players on the roster.
Right.
And now it's starting to trickle down to like almost a bubbles finals where we're like, you know, if they surpass the Boston Celtics, how many guys are going to actually be healthy to compete?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So like PJ Tucker got hurt. Right. And then ended up staying in. Jimmy apparently is fine, but out of nowhere in game three, they're like, oh yeah, he's not playing the second half. It's like, what happened? I didn't see an injury at all. But I do wonder, because like the injury list, and I'm not saying these guys aren't hurt, but the injury list exploded for the Heat yesterday. And all of a sudden, like six dudes are questionable. And I kind of think it's a little bit of gamesmanship from Pat Riley, because the Celtics have been very fast and loose with the injury report on their end. And I think the Heat, in a very petty way, Mo, just decided, all right, you know what? Yeah, we've got injuries too. We don't know who's playing.
Duke can play this game.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I think that's kind of what they really wanted. You know, they're like, oh, you guys are going to do this? Whole team, questionable. We don't know who's playing, period. I think that's kind of what Riley's doing there. And, you know, it sucks for gamblers, but ultimately I think this is the tit for tat, and there's no love lost between the two teams in this series. You know, this goes back a while ago, right, to Pat Riley putting out the press release. I forget what the exact quote was, but somewhere along the line,
I think he told Danny Ainge to shut the fuck up.
I think it's that exact, like in a press release. And mind you, that's calling your PR people going, yes. And they're like, no, wait, you really want us to do this? Like,
who's the guy in Miami? Tim Donovan. He's like, hey, we gotta tell Danny to shut the fuck up. Okay, you want me to call? No, put out a press release.
I want it quoted.
Official,
I want them to know it
Miami
came from
Heat
me.
Letterhead.
So this is a bit of like a fun rivalry, at least between the two organizations in that sense. And man, like more importantly than anything else, Miami was just so damn physical with the Celtics in game three. Got into their bodies. Really, I mean, 23 turnovers, 19 of them live ball turnovers.
19 live ball turnovers is insane.
I mean, the fact that they had 19 steals as a team is absurd.
That's nuts. So on the Celtics side of it, Trey, like I want to see, you know, we've seen Jason Tatum have games, we've seen Jaylen Brown have games, and it's not all that common when they both have big games at the same time, right? And so Tatum really struggled in game three. I thought the Heat just did a great job on him. PJ Tucker did a great job. Jimmy at parts in the first half, Bam when he was switched. Like they even Gabe Vincent got switched on Jason Tatum. Like he really competed and they got him out of rhythm. But Jaylen Brown steps up. And I wonder how you get those two on the same page in the same playoff game, because I'm always looking for Jaylen Brown to do more. I just think he's a spectacular talent, and not that he doesn't do a lot. Like he's obviously been an all-star and everything, but I wonder how you can do that against the Heat to get both those guys having a big game.
Man, it's about rhythm, and it's kind of hard to get in a rhythm when one guy is rolling and then you kind of try to find the other guy, and it's not like they're sharing the sugar like they should. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, right. All right, we're going to run the offense to Jason, and Jaylen, you're going to get your touches, and you know, but I think Jaylen sometimes when he's having a good game, he's having a good game, and that's when Jason's not. You know what I mean? And that's when they go to him more. But Jason is the guy who's going to always get first dibs. And for them to have both is probably when Jason's sitting on the bench, not when they're both on the floor. And it's kind of alternating, and the offense is ran through maybe Jaylen. You know what I mean? So yeah. Leaning on it, I think they're going to need more than just those two. You know what I mean? Like, Marcus Smart was like, you know, obviously I thought he crushed his ankle or something, and then comes back on like a Paul Pierce kind of thing, which was kind of strange. But like he's pretty banged up, and you know what I mean, like they've been a really good basketball team when him and Al Horford are active on the offensive end.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Because everyone talks about the defense, obviously, right? Because those are two very good defenders. But you're right, like offensively, they just move the ball. Like they both just move the ball, and they're a threat. You know, at least Al's a threat to shoot those corner threes, and then Marcus Smart will occasionally make a shot, make a jumper. But he makes really good decisions with the ball, in taking kind of that distributor role, which is not something I thought I was going to describe Marcus Smart as. going into the season. But yeah, Mo, like on the Celtics side of it, how much of game three was just like those live ball turnovers? I mean, again, 19 steals, three different Heat players had five different Heat players had multiple steals. Like, I mean, that was just, it was so sloppy, but I don't know how much of that was sloppiness and how much of that was the Heat just imposing their will.
God, it's a little bit of both, but some of this is like Jaylen Brown does have a sloppy dribble. Like it's very loose. Like he tends to kind of lose the ball a lot when he drives and things like that. So that's kind of a weak point there that teams can focus on. And there were possessions where he just literally was like, "Here, Victor, have the ball." Like it looked that bad,
yeah,
with some of his drives and just kind of fumbling the ball in that instance. But you know, the Heat again ramps up the pressure, picks up the intensity and the physicality of it all. And then the Celtics just didn't match it right away. It felt like in the first quarter, they weren't expecting the Heat to come out and throw the first punch, which was really funny because they were saying in the timeout before the start of the game, you know, Jaylen Brown saying like, "Yo, we got to throw the first punch. We got to throw the first punch." And like the Heat threw the first, second and third punch in that quarter. Like they just brought it completely. And it felt like the Celtics were totally off guard and as if they didn't come in with the mentality of like, yo, this is going to be a battle. I think they came in there thinking like, we're going to be able to kind of walk through these guys after winning, what was it, 7 of 8 quarters in the first two games, you know? So I felt like there was a little bit of almost a weird sort of vibe when they started.
This quarter thing, man, it's just driving me nuts.
I'm going to keep doing it just to keep driving
you know what?
I'm going to send you a text message after each quarter.
I want this series to go 7 because I love it. Like, I think it's so petty. I think it's, you know, two just physical, good defensive teams. Like, I want this thing to go 7. But there's also part of me that wants the Miami Heat to win in 5 and the Celtics to win 3 of the next 4 quarters in each game. But the Heat to win in 5, just because it's just, I hate that mentality. I hate that. Well, we've won. You're down. You're down in the series. it doesn't matter what you've done up to this point. Like, you have to win 3 more games. That's what you have to do. That is the only thing that matters. There is no moral victory stuff. Like, Dallas maybe can be like, oh, we made the conference finals, here we go. But we'll talk about them in a little bit. They're getting smoked, right? Like, they're getting smoked and the guys are choking, and like they don't have their role players showing up and everything. It's like, it doesn't matter anymore. All that matters are victories. We're at that point in the season where it's just victories. And so, like, yeah, all right, go win three or four quarters. You're probably gonna need to win four or four quarters then, if that's how that's going. With this series going into game four tonight, Mo, what do you expect an adjustment to be for the Celtics?
Not throw the ball everywhere. I think the more interesting aspect of it is, I think they will try to get to getting Tatum catches on the move more than stagnant opportunities. I think they're going to get him trying to fly off pin downs and floppy action and things like that,
yeah,
to get him into get the defense chasing him and allow him to attack from there. And then from there, he'll be able to kick out and stuff like that. Cause like the Celtics offense, when it's at its best, it's like you guys were saying, the ball gets moving, you know, even Jaylen Brown's passing the ball, even Tatum, they're the ball swings around. They get multiple rotations around the perimeter and stuff. It gets in the paint, all that stuff.
They can have the Heat scrambling at times, and the Heat are a great defense.
Yeah, I mean, they just do a great job of, like, once they get them chasing you, then they can attack. And I think they didn't do a good job of that. A lot of it, even though Jaylen had 40 points, a lot of it was kind of one-on-one stuff, and that's going to play right into the defense's hands. They're at their best when the ball's moving around. So I think I would look for more just movement stuff in general. Then I think we're going to see some rotation things. I think Peyton Pritchard's going to get more minutes than Derek White, and I think that's an important aspect of that. And I think that's something you got to keep in mind if you're Ime Udoka, is Derek White's hesitant to shoot, and I don't feel like that's something you could have on the court.
Trey, if the Miami Heat win game three, who had it, like, which of the role players had a big game? Is it Tyler Hero finally figuring out, because he looked terrible in game three? Is it Tyler Hero? Is it like Duncan Robinson coming off the bench to shoot? Is it Max Strus just having a big game? Who do you think has a big game for the Heat if they're to go up 3-1?
I'm gonna say Max Strus. I mean, Hero, that's probably the obvious answer, but like Max Strus is my surprise answer. Duncan, he's just he's a $90 million man podcaster at this point.
Wow. Shout out to him, man.
Can we get that job?
American dream, man. American dream, you know. But yeah, I think Max Strus is, you know, kind of doing what he's supposed to do, you know what I mean? And causing a living hell, you know what I mean? As far as playing a little bit above his scouting report, you know what I mean? Like, you're telling him, like, he's going to do this, this, and that, and he's kind of still there. Harrell, whether he figures it out or not, I think that, you know, he'll be effective in other ways for them.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Moving on to the conference finals, in the Western Conference Finals. A little disappointed in Dallas. Was hoping to at least have this thing go, you know, back 2-2 and then maybe the Warriors smoke them. But the third quarter Warriors, Mo, are just like, they're back. They're a thing. It is really hard to deal with them after halftime. And Dallas has learned that tremendously the last two games. You know, they should have won game two and they just got annihilated in the second half. And then last night in game three, man, like Andrew Wiggins murdered Luka Doncic, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Like, Luka had to work for everything. He has a great game, right? Has a great efficient 40, but only, I think, three assists because Reggie Bullock couldn't hit a shot. Maxi Kleber got afraid to shoot. Even like Davis Bertans had a couple of three pointers and those didn't fall. But though, I think those three guys, and those are three of your shooters that you're supposed to rely on, went like 0 for 14 from three. And it was I thought with like Reggie's, at least, like, I felt like all of Reggie's misses early were in and out. Like, he was just like, they were about to fall and then they decided not to fall. And then I don't know if he got in his head at a certain point. I know he hurt his shoulder at one point when on a hard fall, but man, like, I kept waiting for that, that dam to break and those guys to start hitting, and it just never happened.
I mean, it was, I've never seen a team that's pretty good shooting team miss so many open looks in an entire series.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they've gotten a ton of great looks from three and have just kind of completely fallen apart. And like, it's shocking. Like, when you look at what they did in the first two rounds of the playoffs, they shot 38.5% from three. In this series, they're shooting 32.6, and it's like, they're also good looks.
Yeah, they're wide open. And it's not like, oh, let's give Dwight Powell a bunch of these looks. Like, they're the shooters. The shooters they want shooting.
Right. You know, everybody's like, you know, the box in one was so great. Look what the Warriors have done. They were getting wide open corner threes from guys that normally make them and just could not make a shot for the life of them. And I think it's like, okay, well, you're not, it may not be so much the defense as much as you guys can't make a shot. That's what's most startling about anything. And then on top of that, the Warriors are getting great, great play. I mean, game two, the Kevon Looney game. Now you get the Andrew Wiggins game. Like, this is, it's been pretty impressive from the Warriors' standpoint of just like, these idiots like Mo thought that they were going to beat us. Like, this is their, you know, their mentality. Like, they're looking at it going like, you're an absolute idiot, you know? And I think that's kind of what they're doing. And rightfully so. I deserve to be shamed.
Yeah. Trey, with the shooting from Dallas, they have generated 26 wide open three pointers per game, not total, per game in this series. And they're making 33% of them. Like, I don't know. Like, if you're Jason Kidd, I don't know what you do, because they're generating the looks they want. If you're Luka Doncic, I don't know what you do. But like, it's just, other than like Spencer Dinwiddie, I don't feel like a lot of these guys have just stepped up.
First of all, the five out is not working. The Warriors are doing a damn good job running the Amoeba 3-2 man matchup zone, whatever they're masking it up to be. And taking away the drive. I mean, guys are just playing hot potato, trying to find the best shot. And, you know, with Kleber being, you know, insecure right now about being aggressive on offense, it's just playing into the, you know, playing into the Warriors' hand. And like, Luka can only do so much as far as forcing the drive and trying to get some contact. And yeah, like you mentioned, Spencer Dinwiddie, he's the guy that's jabbing and taking some tough shots. And some of them are going in, but like, you know, shots from Finney Smith aren't falling, and the offense is absent, you know, and like, you can't beat a team like the Warriors trying to play that type of style of basketball.
Yeah, they've just been too good. All right, let's get to the murder. what I loved is when Wiggins was asked about it after the game, he was like, I don't know, I got a lot of posters, you pick, which is such a flex, because he does. And the NBA cut together like all these dunks, like him dunking on Rudy Gobert and him dunking on Omer Sheik and JaVale McGee and all these ones, right? Dunking on Cat. And so the absolute travesty of this, and I will never forgive Mark Davis. And Mark Davis is not a good official. Like, a lot of people go out there, but a lot of players will talk about how they think he's a bad official and everything. And he tried to get Theo Pinson to like change his shirt.
That was weird.
Because it's weird. The same. And he's like, I'll buy you one or whatever. And Theo, and then it cuts to Theo, and he's just like wearing his same shirt. Like, he's like, no, I'm not doing that shit. So that was weird. But like, what an incredible moment. Like, he closes, like Reggie Bullock closes out hard on him. He dribbles left, plants 2 feet, takes off, just annihilates Luka at the rim. And it wasn't till like Wiggins like lands and he's like kind of gathering himself to get back up, and or not get up, but like kind of get upright and go back down. And then all of a sudden Mark Davis like blows the whistle and calls a charge. And then I think Steve Kerr challenged it, right? They didn't review it. It was just a straight up challenge. And so he challenges it. They rightfully, you know, take away the foul and they give him the 2 points. But like, you fucked up that moment. Like, it was such an incredible play and such an incredible moment. And it was one of those like DeAndre Jordan on Brandon Knight, like one of those, right? And he just absolutely messed it up. And if anything is going to start a referendum on officiating, which I know is hard, I know it's hard, but if anything's going to start it, that's got to be the moment. You took that from us.
The only thing I'll say that was good about it was, at least because it was challenged, we got to watch the replay 25 times or whatever.
Yeah, John Hollinger, I think, said, like, I think he just called the foul so that he could go watch it on the monitor a few times.
Yeah, like, I think there was some of that. Like, I think he called the foul, turned to Steve, challenge that, please. Please. Like, I want to watch that again, please. You know, because if it's in the play, you know, play, just going to keep going. It was an unbelievable play. And, like, you can have Wiggins can talk about all his posters and stuff, and that's a great flex. This is your best one in the moment, in the conference finals, yeah, on Luka. Like, this is your best one. There's no way to deny that.
Yeah, Trey, Wiggins has been unbelievable. Like, obviously, Steph has been the best, right? Steph has been the best, and Draymond's been great, but Wig has been probably the third best player, maybe him or Looney, in the conference finals, and I've always believed that this was in him somewhere. Now, there were times where that belief wavered quite a bit because he just seemed like, all right, I got paid, I'm just going to chill. But the work that Wiggins has done in this system has been unbelievable.
Charles Barkley made a good point last night about how most number one picks are expected to be a Shaq, a LeBron, a Kyrie Irving, you know, and immediately rise to stardom, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case. I think that most teams draft for best ability, especially coming out of college. And Wiggins, you know, it's a lot of people that would really kill for his statistics. I mean, he's 18 a game, you know, and, you know, probably lower now because he's with the Warriors. But, you know, when he was with the Timberwolves, it didn't change too much. He just got on a winning basketball team. Yeah. And the expectations were extremely high. And I think that he always was kind of like maybe a third option guy. And I think Mike Beasley, I think it's a couple guys that if they weren't drafted so high and they probably would have been 10 through 14, their path would have been a little bit more easier to, you know, navigate and kind of consume. You know what I mean? Like, no one never gets the Marvin Williams treatment where you got that time to develop, like, in a Atlanta Hawks. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
Martin Williams, it took like 7 years for him to be like a knockdown three-point shooter and decent defender. So in this case, he was right. He's the plug-and-play Harrison Barnes. You know what I mean? He's that kind of guy that feels that type of need that I feel like, you know, outside of Kevin Durant, where they were able to plug in a superstar, you know, like the three is interchangeable for the Warriors. The machine keeps going. You just put a machine, yeah, you put a three in there. And this has been, you know, being traded to the Warriors is probably so huge for his career. Not only him becoming a first-time All-Star, but just experiencing having fun and winning basketball and just getting the chill and not have all the pressure on him. Steph takes so much pressure off of those guys with the gravity that he has. And then you got guys like Klay and Draymond. Draymond steps in to be the leader. And I think, as teams draft in the future, they have to factor those things in. Do you have a guy that's going to be comfortable with being a leader? Do you have a guy that's comfortable with being the face? Do you have a guy that can just do scoring? And in this case, he's asked to do the bare minimum, a couple dunks here and there, a couple jumpers, maybe a three. You know, if you keep it at 12 a game, great. If you can get more, great. Defend, contain. And that's what he's been doing to his job to a T and making everybody else's life easier.
Yeah, Mo, I think, you know, I've joked about this a lot, but it took a while to get the Timberwolves out of him, right? Because they're just, right. I mean, it was just such a mess. Like, he had a new head coach every single year, it seemed like, and just there is no accountability in that organization, especially when he was coming up. Like, it just wasn't there. And so, as he gets to a situation where, like, no, these guys are going to demand you have to play, the turnaround has been spectacular. And there were times last year where he looked so lost on offense, right? Because I think playing with Steph has got to be just this bewildering experience of, like, wait, the guy gave it up, but we're trying to get it back to him in this area and every, right? Like, there's always this movement. There's everything is live. Right. Every cut, every action, every motion, everything is live. And that's just not how it is. You see guys just standing around constantly. You see guys in Dallas right now in this series just standing around waiting for Luka to do something. And so learning how to play the way that they've had to learn is probably a little more complicated than you're used to at the NBA level. But you see that it finally broke through. And all right, we can debate the All-Star stuff all we want, but he is clearly a different player.
I mean, it's the point you're making about just how he looked lost on offense last year. Like, the Warriors' offense is hard to figure out, in the sense of you do have to have a pretty high IQ to be able to play there to understand we don't really call plays. We run a series of actions and, you know,
organized all chaos, of that's, right?
Like, yeah, exactly. All of that's off of, you know, hey, movements and things like that. When you pass the ball, you still have to go do other stuff. It's not, oh, I didn't have anything, let me pass the ball, I'm going to stand here now, right? It's all sorts of different things behind that. And I think it's, you know, it takes a while for a lot of guys to come in. There's not a lot of guys that can really come in and just immediately get that. It takes a minute for everybody to kind of pick up on how we got to play one steps on the court, because it's entirely different than probably anybody else he's played with. You know, it's not going to be something similar. There's no way to kind of recreate that. But on top of that, he stepped up to the challenge. And on the bigger thing too is he's kind of become their defensive guy. You know, he's guarding Luka, although Luka's dropping 40 on him. But he's also the primary defender when they had Ja Morant in the previous series. Yeah. Like, he's the guy on the perimeter. He gets the toughest assignment. He's got to be he's got to help on that end on top of contributing offensively. I think everything we're seeing from Wiggins is the stuff, you know, we kind of hoped, you know, we'd see at some point, you know. And I think your point about Minnesota just being a shit show, it happens to a lot of prospects, you know. I think,
yeah, where you get drafted is so important, right?
I mean, yeah, just look at the number of careers the Kings have ruined. You know, it's not a it's challenging in that sense. So I think going to a good organization, it takes a while too. Going like, oh, you guys expect me to do this and this. And I think having guys, as Trey was saying, who, you know, will hold you accountable, not just the coaching staff, like, screw around and Draymond's going to get in your ass, you know. And the most important thing I find with the Warriors and Wiggins is, like, it really feels like everybody's rooting for him and trying to get the best out of him. And I think they're seeing the fruits of their labor right now.
Yeah, we've come a long way from Glenn Taylor saying, hey, I'll give you this $150 million, but I need you to promise to try.
Which is, God, so incredibly dumb.
What was he supposed to say? I mean, my goodness. But Glenn Taylor's still interviewing, like, Tim Connolly. He's still running this team, even though he sold the damn thing. It's so weird, understand. But that's a conversation for another day. All right, we're going to now go to Sean Patrick Small. He plays Larry Bird in the HBO show Winning Time, about the Showtime Lakers of the 80s, as they've chronicled with Adam McKay and John C. Reilly, all of the exploits of how Dr. Jerry Buss got the team. It's been picked up for a season two. So we sat down, Mo and I sat down with Sean Patrick Small about the transformation of Larry Bird and all that stuff right here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
We're joined now by Sean Patrick Small. You may recognize him as Larry Bird in the HBO show Winning Time about the Los Angeles Lakers dynasty. I guess Sean, you're the villain, right? It's like it's you and Michael Chiklis who plays Red Auerbach. Like you two are the villains here in Winning Time. What has been the experience of playing Larry Bird?
Yeah, you know, Larry Bird has been kind of a dream role for me for a while, and being able to play him just in general was like a huge dream come true. But then to be the villain alongside Michael Chiklis is just like catapults that to a whole other stratosphere for sure.
I mean, it's way more fun, right? Like you,
yeah.
I mean, besides Jerry West's character, you curse more than anybody on the show. It feels like every other word.
Yeah. It's like 10 to 15% of my dialogue, I think, are curse words. It's pretty awesome. Yeah. Just to be able to kind of like have unabashed, like confidence and swagger just really was a lot of fun, especially like in between takes and like, you know, when we were getting ready and stuff like that.
So what was the process for you in terms of like auditioning for the role, getting the role? Like how many times did you have to audition?
Yeah.
Were you drawn to it immediately? Were you kind of, you know, brought to it because of, you know, a resemblance to Larry Bird? Like, how does this whole thing come to fruition?
Yeah. So it kind of goes back further than just like seeing the casting call. So I had actually been working on a miniseries about Bird and Magic in like 2014, from like their high school years to the 79 national championship game when they first play against each other. Because people had told me like, I kind of look like him, and I was trying to figure out what I could write and act in coming out of college. So I'd been working on that for a while, and then this casting notice popped up, and my sister-in-law's friend saw it, and I didn't even see it. And she sent it to me and was like, you should audition. I reached out to my manager who was working with me on the writing stuff that we were doing to get me like a self-tape through one of her friends, got a self-tape audition. Shot it on a Tuesday. Wednesday morning, we submitted it. Wednesday night, we were told I had a Zoom call back with the casting director. Had that over Zoom on Friday. The following Monday, was told I had a producer's room Zoom call back for Tuesday. Did that on Tuesday. So like within a week, it was audition call back, producer's room call back. And then there was that week of limbo of like, you're still in the running. You know, they really like you, all this type of stuff. And then the following Tuesday, I was told that I got the role, and 2 weeks later I was on set. It was kind of this whirlwind.
And for anybody who isn't in LA or knows the business, this is as easy as that to get any role in anything you want. It is just that easy. Like, it's just within a week, you pretty much know that you've got the job, and it's that easy.
Yeah. I don't just know why other people haven't been. Yeah. I don't know why other people.
Yeah.
Haven't been getting roles like left and right. It's that easy.
It's super weird. Yeah. I just laziness, I think, Sean. Yeah. I think it's just laziness.
I mean, I haven't sent the tape yet. Maybe I will. Who knows? Next thing you know, I might be in the next Mission Impossible. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Yeah. If they need like Paul McKeskey or somebody, you know, somebody weird in later on, I'll do that.
There
you
know,
I'll play any role that Adam McKay wants. Absolutely.
Very, very simple. But so in your studies you've gone so deep into looking into Larry Bird and Magic with everything like that, it almost feels like this was destiny. But what's the prep? Once you know you have the role, what are you going like, okay, now I really need to be ready to go. I am playing Larry Bird. What are you doing in those 2 weeks from when you got the part to when you're shooting?
Yeah. And like when I got the part, I didn't know specifically when I was shooting. So I was told by like my managers, like it could be a week from now. It could be like a month and a half from now. So it was like being kind of prepared and ready. It's like a athletic event, right? Like you're on the bench. You have to be ready to go in whenever coach tells you to. So, like I had all that research that I'd been doing for years. So now I was just putting it into like a human form of like, you know, looking at YouTube on all these different interviews that he did. So like getting his accent down, watching videos of him playing basketball. And even just like, I would watch like the in-between parts of like him just walking, like doing stuff where physically I could try to embody that, on and off. Which I found was super easy after like looking at like an hour of YouTube videos. It was just like stand up straight and like just have the best posture you've ever had in your life and then walk with
Yeah.
No hesitancy. Like, just straight purpose. Like, it's just like everything that he did, it was like A to B. Nothing is going to stop me. And that was it. So yeah, it was just doing that over and over again, getting the dialogue down, getting the accent down so that it was second nature if I had to improv or anything like that. And yeah, my wife was probably pretty annoyed with me by the end of it, just because I was walking around the apartment with like super good posture, talking in the Larry Bird accent and all that. So
yeah.
Talk normal.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, shot at. Yeah, well, that's, I feel like that's the tough thing. That's, you know, being the basketball nerds that Mo and I are, like, we're, you go into this thinking like, okay, cool, like I've read the Jeff Perlman book, like I basketball like nerd and historian and everything, like I know a lot of the stories, but getting, for anything like this, like getting the basketball part of it to look not like a bunch of actors playing basketball, yeah, like cannot be easy. And I'll admit, like, they show flashes of you in like trailers and stuff, and you know, this season on Winning Time and everything, and it wasn't until I saw you like do the jumper for where I was like, okay, like this guy's taking it seriously here. It wasn't just you shooting a regular jumper, like you've got the kind of behind the head form and everything. And and I wonder, like, how awkward was that to film that stuff, because you're not in a ton of basketball scenes, like you're mostly holding a beer walking around or sitting there talking great shit show to Magic. Like, yeah. But yeah, but in terms of how weird was that stuff to shoot and to like kind of nail down?
So we actually, like, HBO and the writers and producers were really invested in making sure that the basketball scenes looked authentic to the time period, and like you said, like actors not playing basketball type of thing. So we actually had a basketball trainer, Edon Ravine, who's trained like Steph Curry and a bunch of other NBA all-stars. And he was tasked of, because I played basketball my whole life, but the way I play basketball is way different than the way they played basketball in the late 70s, early 80s. And Bob, so Rainers, like, yeah, right. So like learning to dribble without carrying the ball, like they, you know, you had to dribble in front of you, and the bird shot was just like, that was a beast in itself, because it's nothing like any other shot I've ever tried to do. So it was like, I think I did like 3 weeks of training or something like that before we even shot any basketball stuff, and a bunch of the Lakers players, like, they were training throughout the whole time. Like, if they weren't on set, they were training with Edon. So yeah, I really wanted to, me personally, I was so detail focused on like, I don't want there to be one little blip where people can be like, oh, that's not Larry Bird, I'm stopping watching the show. You know what I mean? Like, that was just me personally. I know that I wasn't on the screen as much as all these other guys, but I was like, I need to take it that seriously or else it won't come across as this is Larry Bird. And I didn't want people that were my family and friends to recognize me when I was on the screen. And I think that I did that well. And it was just a fun process, because it was, you know, learning his shot. Like, my left shoulder was sore for like a week, because it's like, it's so far out there. Like, cause my shot is just straight up and down, and his is like, oh, it was like weight training all over again. So yeah, it was a fun process. And I told all my friends, like, I'm a professional basketball player. I'm getting paid to play basketball, which is great.
That's the definition of it.
Yeah, right.
I got paid to write on a Comedy Central pilot years ago. I tell Mo to this day, I'm a professional comedian.
There you
like
go.
I wrote comedy and I got paid for it. Like, that's what, that's
it's
how it
really
is.
Annoying. It's actually really frustrating when he says that. But, so let me ask you this question. How much, just when you guys aren't shooting, especially when you're doing the Laker Celtics game, how much trash is being talked amongst the staff between you guys on the cast going back and forth?
I tried to talk as much trash to the guys as possible, without like them getting too irritated at me. I wouldn't really have my phone with me on set, but when we were like in holding or anything, I would, pull up the Dropkick Murphys shipping up to Boston and just like play that in the background. So everyone would just have that stuck in their head. And yeah, I told them, cause you know, for the soundstage they had was usually, it was the Forum floor. And when we were practicing on it, it was the Forum floor. And then like the day that we came in for the first day of shooting for the Celtics game, it was the parquet floors and everything. And I was like, I just looked at everyone. I was like, yeah, this is my house now. So get ready.
I love it.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's get this shit over.
Still mad, I see.
Larry, question. What'd you eat before the game?
Food.
Larry, who's going to guard you?
Who cares?
Larry, what's your prediction?
We're going to win.
Larry,
what do you want to say about the game?
We're going to play the game.
Larry,
you're going to win tonight?
Yep.
Ah, come on. Any jitters?
Nope.
Magic, what do you think about Larry?
Anything about the strategy, Larry?
Just another game. Going to be a good one, though. Two great teams, great rivals. That'll get you going. You ain't got a pause.
Yeah, so obviously, like, it got picked up for season two, and I would imagine, you know, knowing how this stuff goes, like, Larry Bird and the Celtics are much more prominently featured as this.
Spoiler alert, Zach.
I don't know if you. Well, yes, I don't know for anyone who doesn't remember 40 years
yeah,
ago.
Spoiler alert.
Like, the Celtics and the Lakers actually, they're going to play a lot in the 80s in this story. Yeah. And so who knows, like, you know, how deep the next season goes in terms of time. But how, like, do you still continue to prepare for this? Do you slip into the French Lick accent? Like, how often are you thinking about this role once it gets picked up for season two?
Yeah, I've been working out. Like, I mean, just in preparation, I'm kind of treating it like an off season for an NBA player where it's like, I mean, I'm not going to want to get in shape right when I'm starting. I want to be ready and prepped. And like, just in terms of like the Larry Bird character, you just watched Magic win a championship. So I'm kind of letting that guide me where it's like, that's pushing me for vengeance. It's right now. Right.
Yeah.
Like I want to be better than I was last season, acting wise and playing wise and athletic wise. So yeah, I'm prepping like that. I try to slip in and out of the accent just to know that it's still there.
Yeah. Does that mean like you're ordering food and you know, at the restaurant and you just throw it out at the,
you know,
waitress?
I should like, I should do what Jonah Hill did with the Wolf of Wall Street, where I just called the Zappos customer service line and they can't hang up. So I should just do that. That's actually a good idea. I'm going to start doing that.
I'm taking credit. I'm an acting coach now, folks. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, there we go. We got an acting coach and a comedian here with a professional basketball player.
These are definitely our jobs.
And a professional basketball player. We're this is great. Yeah. A little bit different now because you've played basketball all your life. What's your game like? How much, I mean, obviously it doesn't resemble the form of Larry Bird, you know, sticking out the elbow, but describe your game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not as good as Larry Bird. I'm not in the NBA, but I do think that I'm similar in the sense of I can shoot really well. I was like one of the tallest guys on my high school team. So I kind of played a stretch four, stretch five, so I could post it up every once in a while. Good court vision, try to just be in the right place at the right time. Cause I'm not the quickest. I mean, we were playing, like we played Palo Alto High School when Devontae Adams and like Jock Peterson were on the team. So I would be guarding Devontae and he would get by me probably every time, but our team defense was good. So they helped me out. Like they would get a steal every once in a while. So I was like, all right, you guys pick me up. I'll pick you up next time. But yeah, things like that, just knowing where to be on the court, knowing when to shoot, when to pass. And then, my handles weren't as good, but the training for this, I've gotten my dribbling skills down now. So I'm pretty excited to showcase that.
Are you at a point, Sean, where like now, because you're so like ingrained in trying to become Larry Bird and live this life as the character, as you're training, preparing for the role, like if you go play pickup or you go training and they put a white defender on you, you're just offended. You're just like, hey, come on, this is bullshit. Like, how dare you? I'm going to light this dude up. Like how deep into character do you get?
Yeah. I don't know if I go that deep because, I don't have the game to back it up like Bird did, I would say. Yeah.
Sure.
I might say that like in a rec league and then the guy will just, you know, I'll get like 6 points or something because, you know, the quarter's like 8 minutes a quarter.
Yeah.
And more ISO centric. So I'd be like, all right, well, maybe I shouldn't be saying that in the game. But yeah, I'll talk trash if it's like a defender's playing too far off me off the 3-point line or something like that.
Yeah.
We can go from
there. I kind of want you to show up now in your full Larry Bird garb at like the Y.
Yeah, like, I think you have to wear the uniform now. Like,
I know,
in the makeup and everything, the wig. Yeah.
I need to get HBO on point for that because I should just show up to like the Venice courts or something in full. Oh, Larry Bird gear.
We could shoot all kinds of social media stuff with that. Like there's a lot that can be done. Like, I mean, the professor's still around from the And-One tour and he's dressed up as a nerd or Spider-Man. Yeah. Like this is way more relevant.
Yeah.
We can absolutely figure that out.
We're marketing now too. So, now add that to all of our resumes.
There we go.
We're
professional marketers.
This is the resume
social media
right
managers,
now.
Resume
like
building.
Adding so much to your resume.
I don't want to call us executive producers, but we're not executive producers on Winning Time. So, I'll get in touch with Adam and we'll make this happen for sure. So like how excited, you know, you said you're preparing and everything. How excited are you to find out that like season one was so well received and season two gets picked up and now you get to kind of, cause as you know, as someone, as a working actor, like it's not as easy as it was to get the role that you got. It's not normally as quick and you do have this, like this thing to look forward to.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of, you know, knowing the history and stuff, I'm like, all right, if this show keeps going, then Bird will keep going, which is really exciting. Yeah. And that kind of pushes me as an actor to like bring my A+ 1000% game each time. And then when we got picked up for season two, I was just like super ecstatic. I mean, it's like one of those things where you're like, all right, the numbers are good, but you never know. It's like, you know, there are grumblings that maybe it'll happen. It probably should. But when that was like greenlit, I was like, okay, this is something to look forward to, like you said. And any other auditions that I'm doing like are just like the cherry on top of anything that's happening. I mean, for me, I'm just fiending to see the scripts and see how much I'm involved and all that stuff because I'm just itching to get back out there.
So in season one, though, what was your favorite scene so far for you as Bird? What was your favorite scene you got to shoot?
The basketball stuff was just really fun in general, like talking shit to Cooper and Wilkes and then making it on them. I made that shot on the first take. So every time after that, I was just even more like loose and limber, which made me make like most of the shots, which is great.
That's a lot of pressure though, right? Like you got to get that shot on the first take. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and Payman, the director, is like, yeah, you don't worry about like making it and stuff like that. And I'm like, I need to make it. I mean, I'm playing Larry Bird. I can't do this editing where it's like the shot and then it goes straight to the hoop.
No,
like,
it looks so bad. Yeah, that's always you know they fucked it up. Like, yeah, you got it.
So that was really fun. But the scene of like me being in Magic Ted, I just had the most fun on set that day because I just got to be like, I just got to screw with him throughout the entire day. He had to be in this headspace of like, you know, angry that he lost Rookie of the Year. Like, I'm in there to like screw with him, and then Cookie and his mom show up and they're screwing with his head, and it's like,
yeah.
So I got a Funko Pop of Larry Bird, and I wrote a nice little note that said, "From the Rookie of the Year, love Larry," and sent it to his trailer. So that's how we started the day off.
Yeah.
And then we both really like, just like as a snack from Crafty, just like the bag of almonds or cashews or something. And I wrote a nice little note when I got him one from Crafty that said, "F you, love Larry," and just left that on his seat. So doing small things like that just to amp up the tension. So that was just like a really fun day on set.
I mean, that's probably the best scene. Just the back and forth, and that I actually watched it before that's we popped so on. Fun,
yeah.
Like that was a lot of fun watching that going back and forth. You get to talk the most shit. It's probably the best role.
Exactly.
Like,
really the ideal role. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't complain.
Yeah. You do it. You're holding a beer the whole time. Like it's, and now it sounds like you're doing it when you're not shooting. Like, are you sending messages right now? Exactly. Like, hey, I'm coming for you.
I do that kind of subliminally through like, you know, Instagram and stuff, but Quincy and I are good friends. So I try to stay friendly now so that we can like amp it up during shooting, you know?
Yeah.
And anyone else that I have to talk shit to, I'm letting it sit on simmer. But yeah, it'll definitely be full throttle in season two for sure. And in terms of the beer drinking, I did talk to Edon and he's like, yeah, you need to just, you know, just keep training and stuff like that. And Bird's funny, like body wise, because, you know, he would work out, but he would drink beer. And I'm like, yeah, so I just work out and then I drink beer for dinner, right? Like,
terrible job. My God.
Yeah. So it's funny. Now I have whatever I'm eating for dinner, I have at least two beers with it. So
such a tough role.
I know. Right?
It's really just a nightmare role for you.
Yeah. It's not like, Sean, it's not like the Marvel superhero bodies where it's like cut all carbs, no alcohol. I'm living a dream right now, guys.
Chris Pratt's like eating chicken, eight ounces of chicken every 45 minutes. And stuff like Sean, we'll get you out of this, and we appreciate the time because this has been a lot of fun for us because we're big fans of the show. Can you just, I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but if you can kind of just channel that accent a little bit and just tell us "fuck you," if you could just give us one of those as Larry, like, just I'll ask you a question as Larry Bird, if you can just give us whatever version of that you've got. But I just want to, you know, how did you feel when Magic Johnson won the title and you only won Rookie of the Year?
Fucking awful.
Perfect. There you go.
There it is. On the spot. There it is. Sean, do you want to direct anybody towards anything? Instagram, projects you're working on, just Winning Time in general?
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't watched Winning Time, it's a perfect time because you can binge all 10 episodes right now. So I know how everyone doesn't like to wait for the week to week. So now is a perfect time if you haven't started. My Instagram is at Sean Patrick Small. I think my Twitter is at Sean P _ Small. You can tell I use Instagram more than Twitter by me knowing
man,
that.
Smart man.
yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, that miniseries that I started writing, I'm still kind of working through that. We have Thomas Carter attached as the director right now. He directed Coach Carter, and he's done a bunch of TV stuff. So, just staying busy with that and auditioning and then gearing up for season two.
There it is. Sean Patrick Small, aka Larry Bird. Thank you so much for the time. And again, like, go get the HBO Max app. Go watch Winning Time. It's fucking great.
I agree. Thank you for having me, guys. This was really fun.
Thanks, Sean. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Let's get this shit over.
Tonight?
Yep.
Oh, come on.
What do you think about Larry?
What do you think about the strategy, Larry?
Another game.
Going to be a good one, though. Two great teams, great rivals. That'll get you going. You ain't got to pause.